Hey guys, welcome back to the Detour Live. It's our 2021 Tour de France review show where Scooter and Iffy are going to be absolutely ruthless as they give all the teams a review from this year's tour. And I'm sure Johnny, like particularly when it comes to bike exchange, you're just going to call it as you see it, aren't you?
You are a smart ass. Of course, I always call it as I see it. I just see it differently to you most times. That's all.
I'm joined, as always, four-time national road champion Johnny Trevorrow and Olympic gold medalist and commentator Scotty McGrory. I love poking the bear straight off the bat, but on a positive note, yesterday it was a fantastic stage, particularly for Wout van Aert, who's an absolute freak. And if he joins another list of this amazing young talent that we've got in the world of cycling at the moment.
Oh, look, he is a superstar. And, you know, the interesting, we knew he could do all of those things. Like even last year's tour, we saw him on the mountains with only half a dozen climbers left, and he was still doing the job on the front for Roglic last year. And then, you know, he's always in the mix of sprints and time trials. We know how world-class he is. But he put it all together to win a mountain stage, the time trial, and then the final stage. But I was talking to Stewie O'Grady just before. As a matter of fact, he's going to come on shortly, hopefully.
He's here now.
Well, there you go.
The man who knows a little bit about sprinting, Stewie O'Grady. How are you, mate?
He does. Well, we're talking about Wout and how special it was, and I was about to quote your line, but I didn't know you were on. So what you were saying about doing it those 2 days in a row. So you say it better than me, Stewie.
I mean, we just got up on the phone this morning, bit of a debrief as we've kind of been doing a lot lately, and I mean, I just said to Johnny that I literally just can't believe that he's backed it up after winning a time trial to win a sprint on the Champs-Élysées. I mean, you know, I have done a few time trials and a few stages in my time, and normally when you go really deep in a time trial, the muscle damage you do, you really pay for the next day, your glutes. I mean, you're already in the third week of a grand tour. And to pull off the time trial, which he did after winning a mountain stage, you know, then going on to, you know, just finish second just behind Cav, to back that up and to beat the best sprinters in the race on the Champs-Élysées, just that's I'm still struggling to kind of comprehend it, to be honest.
Defies the laws of physics, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Leading into the Olympic, Scooter, I mean, you know, it'd have to be one of the favourites to do the double, the road and the time trial.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Filippo Ganna, who is also doing the team pursuit, so he's juggling individual time trial and the team pursuit, so he's probably still the favourite for a one-day time trial like this. But, hey, you're not going to put anything past Wout van Aert, are you? You know, the guy's just exceptional. And while it is – so the road race for the Games has 100 metres more elevation gain than the Mont Ventoux double stage that Wout van Aert won. So that shows you how hard this particular stage is. So the height, Mont Ventoux is the highest elevation gain of the stages in the Tour de France, and the Olympic road race is 100 metres more than that. So it's going to be pretty tough, but this guy is just incredible. He can seem to do anything. And I think the other people that were happy to see Wout van Aert get that stage win on the Champs-Élysées were all of Eddie Merckx's fans. Good stop Cav from getting the record. I think the bonuses. I suggested, guys, that there was a photo afterwards of Eddie and Wout together smiling, you know, as if in a bit of a, you know, intimate conversation. And it could have been, you know, just laughing about the pre-stage bonus that Eddie may have offered Wout if he did actually beat Cav and stop the record.
It's pretty tricky there when you look back over the tour. I remember watching the stage where, you know, I think, you know, we all thought that Cav was going to come and break the record a few stages ago. And you know, looking back, I thought at the time I wasn't sure if those tactics were right, you know, whether or not Cav wanted to, I guess, if he put all his eggs in the basket of, you know, want to do the big, beautiful winning the final stage in green and breaking the record. But I'm really hoping they didn't get the tactics wrong and deliberately do that on that stage, you know, where it just went into complete chaos and Quickstep decided to put Ballerini in the break and rolled that dice. So I thought that was a pretty bold move. You know, you only get very few chances to win stages in the tour, and I'm just hoping that they didn't get a little bit overconfident there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still sport in the end, isn't it, Stewie? So you wouldn't want to risk it. Like if you're trying to win the NBA finals or whatever, you don't want to go like the organization, the NBA wanted to go down to the last game of seven. You know, it's great for spectators, but as a team, you just want to get the thing done because you don't want to risk it. And yeah, I agree with you. We will maybe. I don't know if that would be too embarrassing for them. I would think to admit that if they did use those tactics. So,
well, the only other thought I had there was that because obviously Matthews is only 37 points behind, you know, and Cavs only just, they've all just hauled their bodies over four really difficult stages. Whether or not they just needed one more day to try and get him a bit of active recovery. And not, you know, obviously not have then Matthews potentially beat him in the sprint and be closer to losing the green. There's a few takes on it, and I'm sure that'll come out in the future.
And that was also the morning that Cav had his meltdown with the mechanic, and which shows you how much pressure he was under. He was really worried about it all, you know. So maybe it did play out that way. I don't think they planned the break to go, but once it got a bit of a lead, Bellarini was in there, wasn't working. They suddenly just said, you can start working, and they decided, you know what, let's just let it go. I think they changed their mind at that point. Looking at it, that's what I thought.
Mm. Yeah, look, I think that, look, at the end of the day, the overall objective is to win the green jersey. I mean, that's just got to be the number one goal. You know, trying to beat records and the media were really up for it and wanted Mark to come out and just blurt out, of course I want to beat his record. But he kept composed even at the end of long, hard stages. But at the end of the day, a competitor is a competitor. You know, records there to be broken. I think Cav kept it pretty well together. But, you know, the pressure of just finishing a Tour de France, I think we spoke about it earlier on in the tour when you said, you know, what's it like racing for the green jersey? It's bloody stressful. You know, every day you're just getting hammered with the same questions. You know, can you do it? Can you win it? And then throw in the whole Eddie Merckx record-breaking achievement. I know it'd break most people, to be honest.
Yeah.
And he'll probably never get it, you know. He's only going to win one more. Well, but next year he's not likely to win a stage. You got with everyone back, with all the top sprinters there, he probably won't. And you know what? It's probably fitting that they stay equal because Eddie is Eddie and he's equaled it. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, the only comparison is the number. There's no actual comparison between the athletes. It's just the number of stages they won. So, yeah, it's silly that some journalists have kind of alluded to, you know, there being some kind of, you know, standoff between the two. It's ridiculous. I don't think Eddie or Cav actually think that they're in competition. Well, maybe Eddie does because he just wants to be the best of all time. And that will never change. He is. And you know, it will take another 40 years for someone else to maybe come across and be better than Eddie. But you can't compare those two guys.
Wout van Aert actually said something about that. Sorry, buddy. But
I can't get a word in on that. Eight cracks.
I'm pretty sure you can mute us, though.
I can. I don't want to have to go to the red card. But I was just going to say in the final sprint that what the saddest part about the whole final day for Cav, as you said, he's probably not going to win it next year, but it just to me looked like there was something wrong with his handlebars. I blame the mechanic. I think the mechanic has cost Cav the record, and he had every right cracking the dummy because it just didn't look right. The bike did not look right, and I think he's got every right to crack the shits. So anyway, that's all I wanted to throw in, just an irrelevant, stupid gag. Back to your deep analysis.
But it might have been accurate. 15 years working with him, but he's not going to do 16. Get rid of him.
That's it. But it's a good point you raised, Stuart, because, like, next year, you know, Cav is going to want to race again, but let's be realistic about it. When you get all the top guys back, you get, you know, Cav on top of his game. What sort of value do you put on all of this? Do you look at it for what it is and just go, mate, it was one of those all the stars aligned, or do you give him a crack again? What, it'll be 36 going on 37?
No, I think you nailed it. I think all the stars aligned. I mean, he wasn't even supposed to be on the start line. Opportunities arise and you can say all the things you want to say. But, you know, Bennett having that small injury, you go back to Cav nearly not even really having a team, kind of coming in and with his own investors, going to Lefebvre with an offer which Lefebvre couldn't really knock back. And, you know, all credit to Mark Cavendish. I mean, what an absolute legend. I mean, we all knew that. And I think it's easy to kind of forget about people's achievements and start comparing. You know, the guy has won the biggest races in the world. He's been world champion, won Milan-San Remo, won classics. Like, he's an absolute superstar. And it's easy to kind of forget about those things, especially in the world of social media and just constant updates, and people just want to know what happened today and they forget about things tomorrow. But it is going to be difficult for him because, you know, I guess looking forward, Sam Bennett probably will be in the team next year. He will be their main sprinter. And where does Cav fit in? You know, he's not really a lead-out man. That's just not in his genes. So, and, you know, if he goes to another team for, you know, what other team's going to, you know, give him a big bunch of bag of Euros? When you're not on that lead-out train, when you're not on the back of the Morkov train, you know, you're probably not going to win. So, you know, all respect to Cav for gritting his teeth and the passion, the respect, the hugs, the love he gave his team and everybody. We saw a different side of him. But looking for next year, I struggle to see how he's going to fit into to another team, actually, and win.
Yeah, well, you've been on holidays in on Kangaroo Island, so you've missed a couple of things. But looks like Sam Bennett is going back to Bora.
Oh, that's right. Yes. So no, I do remember that. But I mean, yeah. Look, you know, whatever happens over the off season, and look, you know, I really hope that Cav does get he deserves another contract. You know, he's just won the green jersey. So, but you know, he certainly wasn't Patrick Lefebvre's first choice off the rank. So whether or not he depends looks to go ahead with that remains to be seen, I guess.
Other one that he also at going to Quick Step next year again is Fabio Jakobsen, who coming back from, you know, that terrible crash at the Tour of Turkey caused by Dylan Groenewegen, or to do with Groenewegen and the barriers. So if he can get back to full form, you know, on paper he's probably faster than Cav. Groenewegen himself depends on where he sits with his team, whether he rides the Tour next year. Caleb, of course, is quicker at the moment. Sam Bennett, if he gets back to full health with mental health with Bora, there's four guys right there, you know, that would be in contention next year to beat Cav in bunch sprint. So we'll see how that plays out. We don't know if Jakobsen's going to be the man for the Tour next year or Cav, but they'll take whoever's the quickest, you know, going into next year.
Hey, one thing we didn't touch on yesterday's show, and Richard's brought it up. He says, what are your thoughts on some riders reporting hearing strange noises coming from some riders' rear wheels? Four teams have won 13 of the 19 stages, Iffy.
Well, we didn't bring it up because I mentioned it the other night that some clown had written that. And I don't want
Richard,
to give it any
Richard's
care.
The clown's name.
No, it's not Richard. It was on Cycling News, Cycling Tips, about strange noise, three unidentified riders. It is so much bullshit. I don't want to give it too much air.
Yeah, it's like the old Spooky Dokey days.
UFH, mate. Not UFOs. It's unidentified flying hubs. I reckon they've got little engines in their hubs. Apparently,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure the UCI. I must have missed that one as well. I must have been on Kangaroo Island while I was camping before that, Johnny. Enjoying some family time. But, yeah, look, a lot of those things, a little bit with the Bahrain raids and so on, you know, once again, that can just be created from a little bit of jealousy and basically rumours. So, again, I agree, you know, don't give it too much airtime. The UCI have measures in place to control bikes, which they do after every stage and before every stage. So, yeah, just a load of garbage.
Mm-hmm. And when these things come up, can I just say that, look, you know, we understand, you know, the previous era where, you know, in terms of medication and stuff, there were certain things going on. But when there's accusations about, say, Bahrain or now with the motor doping or whatever you want to call it, where is the proof? Where's the substance? And we know that the Omerta doesn't exist anymore. Riders are dobbing each other in. If these riders were serious about hearing strange noises, as alleged by Cycling News or whoever it was that reported it, they'd be straight onto it. But those teams would be saying, hey, UCI, you've got to go and check that bike right now. Don't let it get put into the back of the car or into the team's truck mechanic or mechanic's truck. Go and check it out right now. These things would get discovered. There are too many people around cycling now, too many people that change teams, that hear these stories, know these stories, for things not to come out. So if nothing comes out in the next, you know, 12 months, then yeah, it was just another fabrication and a load of bullshit. But
well, they were doing that last time I was at the tour, Scotty. I know it's been a couple of years since I've been back at the tour, but even when I was racing, they'd come over in the UCI, I'd put a little sticker on the top tube, and that bike went directly into get tested and full X-ray machines. And that was obviously a few years ago, but you know, the last time I was over there with Moo Moo Cycling, the UCI were walking around with iPads, you know, X-raying bikes and looking for heat detection out of anything mechanical inside of frames. And I actually asked the commissaire while I was there in front of the group, have you ever seen or come across any kind of, you know, cheating or motor doping, what have you? And he said, no, flat out no, not in the world tour level. Potentially in lower rankings where they haven't got the ability to test bikes and the resources and the costs involved in doing that, but they've never come across a single subject in the world tour level.
Yeah, we've got a few more comments. Skull, he makes a good point. Says Mark Taylor was very happy to make 334 runs to equal Don Bradman's score of 334. Cab winning 34 should be very happy to equal Eddie's record of 34 stage wins. Obviously, Wombat Breath, looking forward to seeing how Walt Van Aert goes in Tokyo. And Tom Maloney says, I'm well aware of the convention of the lead out, but there's an uneasiness in having the lead out to have to ease to let a rider win. Isn't a race about fastest or best position being the winner? What do you reckon, Stewie?
No, quite mildly. No, it's team tactics. Everyone's there to do a job. If your lead out man happens to be slightly quicker, then he's got to hit the brakes and let the guy win that is going for the GC for that classification. So, look, everyone's got a job to do, and all the guys are very well instructed about that. There's no point Michael Morkov, you know, winning a stage and beating Cav back into second. It's Cav's the main sprinter. That's his job.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tommy Maloney, who asked that question, the reason why Tommy's asked that question, because Tommy was one of our strongest bike riders, almost went to a games, whatever, but I don't remember him ever winning a sprint. So if there were three people there, he came third. If there were two there, he ran second. So, Tom, get over it, mate. Get over it.
Fair sledge. I reckon Tom's talking more so about the intermediate sprints, because Morkov often would lead out and then hit the brakes to let Cav get maximum points. That's just tactics. You know, it's not.
No, I think Tommy's talking about the stage that Morkov ran second to Cav.
Yeah, potentially, but potentially it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the main rider's there to, you know, it's been happening forever. The intermediate sprints are a very different sprint to a sprint finish. Normally they're left a lot later. You know, there's not as many guys going for them. The top speed's still there right at the end, but you haven't got the intensity leading up to it. So normally there's only a handful of blokes that are actually going for the intermediate. So, you know, you're always trying to leave it to the last second to try and come over the top. And there were a lot of times, you know, when I was going for green that I was happy just to follow the wheel and get second or third, because the amount of energy that it took to actually hit out and try and come around or come off the guy in front, you might have a 30K mountain just around the corner. So, you know, time and a place for everything. But, yeah, don't see any of those tactics changing, and they never have really.
Hey, Stewie, how good were back in the heyday the post-tour crits? Like, we were talking about it on the show yesterday, but if you did something in the Tour de France, you're a stage winner or you wore the jersey at some point, I mean, how much could you mop up in the 10 days after the tour's finished?
Oh, I think you might want to get Robbie McEwen on to answer that one. Oh, look, you could race every day of the next month if you had the willpower and the freshness to do so. But yeah, they were pretty big. They were pretty crazy. You know, a lot of money got thrown your way if you happen to win a green jersey or win a stage. You know, if you're fortunate enough to don a jersey, a yellow or a green. And you know, they could see some good marketing value out of bringing you up to Holland or Belgium, then you definitely never said no to the invitation, that's for sure.
Can you, Stewie, or would you be willing to divulge how much money some of those higher paid guys were getting for a criterium? And I know I did mention yesterday that Cookie did buy a Maserati with some of the cash from the post-tour crits, came across to Germany, to Cologne, actually paid cash for it, walked into the dealership, was Ferrari and Maserati. He walked in looking like Cookie, right? So it looked like he'd just come off the beach. And they were questioning whether he should even touch the vehicles. And then he told them that he'd pay cash for it. And then they were very, very welcoming after that, looked after him, and he drove out in one. Yeah. So how much money used to be involved in some of these post-tour crits if you're the yellow jersey winner or, you know, one of these guys in the green?
A lot, yeah.
Did he give you that?
Look, you know, I'm just going to I won't go into too many details, but, yeah, it was a lot of money. You know, most of the criteriums there, it was actually ticketed venues. So if you wanted to go see a criterium, I think it was €20 to get in, and they're all fenced off with DJs and food stalls, and it was more like a music festival with cycling as the animated theme that was going around, you know, keeping everyone a little bit preoccupied. But, you know, they're pretty hard and obviously attract a lot of people. I mean, you know, Belgium and Holland cycling is, it's their sport. So for them, it's like going and watching a Big Bash game or an All-Stars game of football or AFL or NBL, whatever. People are prepared to pay to just go and you know, see the athletes, which they've been cheering for from their couches for the last 3 weeks. So, you know, there was a big dollar value in that, and obviously they got a really good marketing and a lot of business out of it. So the money was pretty good. You know, I've heard some pretty strong rumours. I think Lance was on about $100,000 per crit.
I backed it up as well. I was at a race that he was at for $100,000. Actually, this was a road race he went to, Sparkasse Giro in Bochum. Yep. Not sure if you were there, Stewie, but I remember, because that's after the tour, I was starting my build-up towards the winter and the six-day events, and I remember it just started to rain a little bit. Brake was up the road, and it was on a circuit.
I was there.
Yeah, and Lance had flown in from, I think, San Sebastian. So the San Sebastian Classic the day before, flown in with a private jet, and I'm riding beside Lance. It just starts to rain, and sort of out of the blue, he said, "Oh, it's getting a bit too wet for us out here, Scott." And I said, "Mate, I've got the 6 days, and I've got to get the distance. I need the training." And he's like, "Oh, okay." Didn't say anything else, but within the next lap, as it started to rain a bit more, he pulled out. Now he was at the airport taking off before as the presentations were happening, and the organizer of that race that had paid $100,000, which was my old team boss, Ernst Klaasmeier, he was not very happy that the main man had already left the building.
I do remember that very well, and I was paid a lot less than that, but I soldiered on through the rain, and it was actually shocking conditions. It was absolutely arctic, you know, hail and rain and what have you, but I think we had slightly different personalities when it came to that, and yeah, I managed to get to the finish, but I remember that day very well. That was horrible.
Hey, Stewie, obviously one of the big standouts from Australian perspective this year's Tour de France is Ben O'Connor finishing fourth in his first crack. Do you see him as a potential Tour de France winner down the track?
Absolutely. Now, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know Ben at all. But, yeah, I think after seeing him, you know, start the final stage in the Giro last year in the pink jersey, you know, I think he became, certainly in the cycling world, a pretty much overnight household name. And to see, it was always going to be interesting to see how he backed it up, you know, on the main stage of the Tour de France. And, you know, I can't say how well he's done. It's just been absolutely phenomenal to watch. I'm really hoping he has a small clause in the bottom of his contract where he gets to renegotiate his deal, which he's just signed with AG2R, because I think he just signed before the Tour de France for a couple or two or three years, and I'm sure it's not the fee that he probably is now deserved. So, look, he's just absolutely phenomenal. I think the ride, which he did in probably one of the most radical kind of Tour de France's I've seen. I mean, every stage was just off the charts. I couldn't pick it. You know, you got Vanderpoel in the yellow swapping off in a breakaway. You know, you've got Van Aert winning mountain stages, and you know, it was just every day was just so unique, and it was fantastic to watch from the couch on the nights that I managed to stay awake. But you know, every morning where I didn't sit up and watch it, I was kind of, you know, you click your phone on in the morning and have a look, and you kind of go, well, yeah, there's no way I ever would have picked that. And to see, you know, the majority of the favourites before the tour started, nowhere near the top 10, just kind of shows you how much of a chaotic tour it was. And for Ben to kind of manage that and get through that, I'm guessing with, you know, with good support, but probably, you know, seeing Van Avermaet go up the state, go off in the breaks early, you know, still a little bit scattered, not sure what he was capable of. You know, I think next year they'll be going in with a very different plan and with the hope and, I guess, pinning all their numbers on him getting on the podium. And I really think the guy's got the – obviously he's got the potential to win a Tour de France. He's got – you know, he's been up there twice now in top five in two Grand Tours, second and fourth. Enough said. You know, the guy's got a massive talent. Looking forward to seeing him go on and achieve some big things.
I think Jai Hindley's the one who ran second, though, isn't he? At the Giro.
Made two mistakes tonight, haven't I?
but your point on
that's sorry, Kangaroo the, Island.
Yeah, Kangaroo Island. on Ben is to be honest, like, so when Cadell came into the scene, so everyone sort of knew him from mountain bike, you know, they knew how exceptional he was. And then, you know, John discovered him at the Tour of Tasmania when he smashed everybody up Mount Wellington there. It was clear that this guy had this incredible talent and physiology. There'd been all the testing that had been done on him at the AIS, so he had this incredible VO2 max. So we knew that this guy had it. He just had to make sure that, you know, all the other little elements were put in place, like mentality and mindset, et cetera, tactics. Whereas Ben has made his way up through the National Road Series. Good rider. I think he won a stage of the Tour of Austria. This guy's not too bad. And then runs fourth of the Tour. So we weren't expecting that. I think, you know, a top 10, he, Jack Haig, were guys that were hoping to maybe run in the top 10. I don't think anyone was expecting him to finish fourth. But to do that shows that you do have all those elements that we mentioned of Cadell. So, you know, he's got some real self-belief now from this. And there is a real opportunity that he can, you know, consolidate that over the next few years.
There's some great quotes from Ben in all the different websites, and I had to write a story for the famous Geelong Addy today, so I grabbed as many as I could have together, and brilliant ones. But he actually thought, when he had that bad crash on stage three, he ended up with 10 stitches in his arm, but his shoulder was really, he was 100% sure he'd broken his shoulder, made it to finish, rushed him up to hospital. And they said, no, it's not broken. Oh, okay. Well, I can start. But he thought his tour was virtually over, you know, 3 days in. But and the other quote, I'll paraphrase it slightly for him, is more Aussie than I thought, because there's a rumour going around that he was going to ride the Vuelta. He said, no, I'm having 3 weeks off. I'm going to mix with my friends, have a glass of wine and relax. So what he actually meant was, I'm going on the piss.
I'll have to excuse myself there. I got that massively wrong, but how good is it then to have two young guys, you know, a Jai Hindley and a Ben O'Connor for the future of Australian cycling? I mean, you know, it just goes to show how good of a crop of young riders we have at the moment. You know, once Caleb makes his way back from crashing out and I mean, it's just exciting looking forward. It's great. It's just awesome for Australian cycling.
Before we let you go, Stewie, how's it going in South Australia? Are you going into lockdown, mate? Like Victoria?
No lockdown. Thank God. No, we've avoided that by the skin of our teeth, evidently. But we are going in. We've just gone into stage four restrictions. So, so not quite. Lockdown. We've been very lucky here in South Australia. Feeling for everybody out there that is or has been, because we've dodged most of it. We're just doing what we can to, I guess, stay focused, stay positive in the other kind of positive way. Just looking at, you know, seeing the crowds in the Tour de France, and, you know, the UK just came out of lifted all restrictions today on their Freedom Day, and seeing the rest of the world kind of click into gear. It's just really good to see, and just can't wait till we can not talk about COVID for a while.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think this is going to spew into the ratings for the Olympics, because there's going to be nothing else to do other than watch the games. Like, I'm going to get right into it this year.
That's for great, sure. Mate.
I think the Olympics, you know, Scotty is commentating on the track racing, and I think, you know, look, it's probably not the best outcome for everybody that's not a sports fan that the Olympics is going on. And obviously there's people out there that don't agree with it at all. But I think, you know, putting all that aside, just to give the world a bit of a boost of happiness and good old competition, what we've seen in the Tour de France, how that kind of elevates it, you know, just kind of you forget about, you know, the bad times going on around the world. And I think, you know, everyone just enjoy it. It's going to be an Olympic Games like no other, that's for sure, without the crowds. With Channel 7, they're going to do a fantastic job with the broadcasting. We're the best country in line with the time zone. So all the main events we're going to be able to watch a lot better than Rio. Rio was really tricky to kind of get your head around and watch events. So times, the schedule was all over the place. So for an Australian sports fan, you know, we're going to have a fantastic Olympic Games coming up.
Scooter,
I reckon you're spot on, Stewie. Now, I did watch. So we had a couple of Zoom meetings that have been happening with the production crew for the Games, Channel 7, and today they shared with us the opening video to start the show for the opening ceremony. And what you're talking about, it's in this video. You know, it's going to be fantastic for everybody to tune in and just watch the start of the opening ceremony. So don't, you know, actually tune in when it's going live at the start of the show, because this video is with Bruce McAvaney, you know, Australia's best, you know, broadcaster, just narrating all the way through it. And it is, it's about, you know, overcoming this really difficult time. And there's so much inspiration to be gained from athletes doing their best and trying to overcome the adversity that we've all been facing. And that's exactly what's going to sum up these games. And look, Japan, Tokyo at the moment are in a pretty sorry state. So we're hopeful that we will get through it. And I'm sure that there will be athletes that will not be able to compete because they do test positive for COVID. So that'll be really unfortunate. But just wait to the opening ceremony. This is going to be amazing that once we get into it. So, yeah, and you mentioned the track, man. I am doing the track. Looking forward to that. We've got Anna Mears on board doing that with me. Also Phil Liggett for the Madisons doing that out of the UK. But I'm also in for BMX, mountain bike, and the road. Question to you, though, Stewie, because you are not in lockdown. You and Brett Aitken, so two Olympic Madison gold medals, could actually sit together and watch the Madisons. You'd maybe fly Brownie across from from Perth and you three watch it while I'm speaking it, and you can send me through some tips and tell me if I'm talking crap or not.
that sounds good, and yeah, I'd absolutely love to do that. But I think you're going to have a challenging enough time calling a Madison race from a studio. That's what I think is going to – I hope they've got enough screens, because it's hard enough to know what's going on when you're actually racing it. It's really tricky when you're trying to watch it. But when you're trying to watch it from a studio, it's going to be incredibly challenging. So good luck with that, Scotty.
Yeah. Well, we were going to have a bit of a heads up. So Kate Bates was going to be our person in the mix zone doing the post-race interviews with all the athletes. And we had worked it out that then she would actually have that extra voice to us, so she could communicate directly to us in commentary to let us know if someone that's not in the race, you know, someone that's not in the peloton at the time has had a mishap or a puncture or something that we've missed on camera, to give us that insight. Unfortunately, she hasn't gone over with all the COVID situation. So we've actually got a news reporter from Channel 7 in Sydney that's never been to a cycling event in her position. So he might be able to give us some insight, but I just don't think it'll be relevant to the sport. But we'll see how we go.
Good luck. Really, as I said, good luck with that.
Thanks, mate.
All right. Well, we've got to get to your team reviews, fellas. So we might leave Stewie there. Thanks for coming on the Detour again, Stewie. Always great insights. And, look forward to checking in again soon, mate.
Sounds good. Yes. All right, guys, I'll leave it to you.
Thanks,
take care,
Stewie. And for all our fans out there, Stewie's going to be doing updates every morning on Sunrise for the Olympics as well. Yeah, so we're looking forward to that.
Oh, good. Yeah, I only great. Just heard that. Johnny said that to me the last week. I forgot to chat to you about it. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, no, looking forward to it. It should be a bit of fun. And yeah, it'd just be obviously it was all supposed to be shot out of Sydney with a panel of Olympians. But, I think we're all doing live crosses from our hometowns now. So we'll be on the screens Friday morning onwards for the duration of the games.
Yeah, good stuff, mate. Looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us. All right, guys. Detour, Stu.
Thanks, Jerry.
Take care. Thanks, mate. Yeah, mate. See ya. Bye-bye.
Stu O'Grady, it's that time of the show, fellas, where we have a quick word from our great mates at Let's Go Motorhomes and a Bike Exchange.
We all love an open road, and often they're easier to find during quieter times of the year. In a Let's Go Motorhome or camper van, you can road trip in comfort and style any time of the year. When the roads are quiet, you can get where you want quicker and easier without jostling for position. Chances are, your destination won't be as busy too, which means you'll enjoy your travelling adventure even more. Plus, if you book a Let's Go motorhome or camper van in the off season, you'll pay less, meaning you can travel longer. There's a type of motorhome or camper van for everyone, so you won't have to compromise on what you want. The whole range has the things you need to help create the perfect road trip experience, including heating and cooling, keeping you comfortable on the road all the time. Whether there's two or six of you, there's a motorhome for everyone. And in a Let's Go motorhome, your journey can be just as fun as the destination you want to reach. The open road is calling. Check out some of our great offers online today and start planning your next road trip. Rain, hail, or shine.
Look at this bike. You think it's just a bike, right? But it's not. It's a bike. 374 people are looking at. This guy, this girl, them, all looking at it. People from here, there, and wherever this is. People that are looking for a bike. Or just a piece of it. Amateurs. Semi-amateurs. And pro-amateurs. This guy wants this bike, but with this crank and these bars. This could be the perfect match. But not this one. This girl has a bike to sell, and thousands of people might purchase it. Eyes on Bikes help grow small businesses. His, hers, yours, and the latest data and insights help those businesses keep moving. We are the world's number one bike marketplace, with over 500,000 products and 900 brands, where buyers and sellers are brought together in a place where a bike is never just a bike. Bike Exchange, where the world buys, sells, learns, and rides.
Thanks again to Let's Go Motorhomes and Bike Exchange. And Iffy, are you going to announce the winner of the best contributor, the final prize we've got, $500 Let's Go Motorhome voucher?
Well, I'm torn between two, and I've checked with our great friends at Let's Go Motorhomes. So we're going to give out two for this final week.
Two.
So free Ranger.
Right.
And I feel so guilty for bashing poor old Tommy Maloney around the ears before that Tom Maloney is the other one. And Tom has been had some great questions come in over the last couple of weeks as well. So there you go. Bang, two. Also, a bit remiss of me, we were supposed to, there's some prizes on for the Karaka Foundation. So I'm just waiting. Lindy Sutherland's going to send me all of the latest list, which is my fault because I haven't told her she needed to send it through to me. So when we're on next, probably either next couple of days, Thursday for sure we're on, I'll give out those other prizes.
It's no stress, John. Whatever you can get that done, mate.
Did I look stressed?
No. And remember to keep the donations going, kareka.co.za/Peloton. Really appreciate everyone getting behind that because I know it means a lot, particularly to Phil and Trish Liggett. And it's a great cause because particularly, as we said, with COVID, we had Trish Liggett on about a week ago and she became quite emotional when she was talking about, you know, what's at stake for the foundation. You know, if they don't get enough money that comes in, the whole thing might fall over and they won't be able to afford the anti-poachers, particularly the team behind that. So really appreciate those donations. Now, fellas, it's time for team review from this year's Tour de France. So we're going to go sort of in reverse order of rankings and we'll kick things off with B&B Hotel. Scooter.
Five for B&B. They were in a lot of breaks, particularly one rider, Bonamore in particular. He had two fifth places on stages, a sixth place, But they would just fill in numbers. And I know Robbie did his review last night on the broadcast on SBS. And I'm looking at it, you know, I don't want to do it the same as what Robbie did, so I want to do it a little bit differently and look at it as, look, the race is the overall classification. That's by far the most important thing. Every other category sits in then below that. Although at the Tour de France, everything that sits below it is still really important, okay? Stage wins, green jersey, polka dot jersey, et cetera, team's prize. They're far more important at the Tour de France than they are in many of the other races. Like the team's class in almost any other race, no one cares about, okay? But at the Tour, it becomes a bit more important. But with that said, every team goes there to try and do something. B&B really come away with nothing. So I only gave them a 5.
Iffy?
Well, I'm not going to go near as long as that, but I gave them 6.5 because they were in the moves nearly every day. They were always in the break. And Frank Bonnemore was given the most aggressive for the whole tour. So they did win something. They won the most aggressive. So he got a presentation on the Champs-Élysées. So, yeah.
And I've been in races where the most aggressive prize was also called by the riders the most stupid
Ooh,
prize.
The chocolate watch award.
As I say, it's about trying to win. And were they trying to win? No, they were just trying to be there and be seen on TV. So I'm not going to give them the same the rankings.
We already heard that. You spent 5 minutes telling us that. You don't have to keep telling it.
Yeah, anyway. You basically were counteracting what I was saying. So I'll come back in to defend myself.
The first team, and we've got some biffo, folks.
Isn't winning races.
Let's go. 20, Intermarché, Wanty.
5.
Yeah, John?
5.
Yeah, and that's only, I would have given them a 4, but Menchie's was 14th on GC. So that's not a bad ride for a team like that for the overall classification. So that's why I was going to give them 4. I'm not giving any 0.5s. This is, you know, round numbers, so 5 for them.
They've got both the Van Poppel boys, Boy and Danny. How'd they go this year? No good.
Danny Boy. It's Danny Boy.
They got popped early.
Okay. Team Total Energies. What do you 4. Give those? 4?
Yep. In breaks gets, because that's all they could do. Yeah, it's about as bad as it gets because they're in breaks.
4, just so you know. I'm not copying you. 4.
Good, okay. good, yeah.
All right, Team Quebecer, next hash.
4.
Iffy?
I gave them a 5, mainly because...
Point for Clarkie.
Exactly. To ride two and a half weeks with a broken back. Broke back mountain.
All right. He gets
a 10 for doing that, for being tough as nails, but the team collectively gets a 4.
Team Astana, Scooter.
Astana, so, and I said, it's about winning the race overall. So Astana didn't do much other than Lutsenko running 7th, which is great. So I gave them a 7 because they're in the top 10, which is, you know, to do that, to have any rider up there, show some class. So 7.
Iffy?
I gave him a 6 because I don't like 6? It very much. I don't like it very much at all.
There's some Vino baggage going on there.
Yeah. Well, I thought you would have given him more points for giving Vino the lemon and sauce before the tour started. That's worth an extra point. Anyway, now the big one, Team Bike Exchange. What score do you give them, Scooter?
You go first, John.
Firstly, before you start, say good day to Jerry and hope he's well.
Yeah, well, you know, Jerry knows I love him.
I'm only team mascot. Look, if you judge, there's a lot of ways you judge a team. It can be on the GC, which they didn't get anything, and I don't think they expected to get a lot there. They hope to win stages. But if it's also judged on how much time you're on TV and the attention you get, then they went okay, because Michael Matthews was in that race for the green jersey right till the last day, and the team rode well to support him for that. So because of that, I gave him 6.5.
Oh, 6.5. We're not too far off then. Yeah. Okay, I gave him a 6, John, because, as I say, Astana got a 7, and I can't give him a 7 because they didn't finish up in the top 10. But because of Bling, because of Michael Matthews, who was competitive, didn't win stages, but he was right up there in the green jersey and having a real crack, that elevated, for me, them from a 5 to a 6.
Okay. Team Bahrain, kick things off, Iffy.
Very impressed. Very impressed. I mean, they like Jack Haig. We'll never know what he would have done, but he was their main man for GC. They were dummies, had riders out, and just kept attacking. I gave them a 9. I thought that they were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, they did. They did a good job, and they were very present. I gave them an 8. So 9th on GC and 3 stage wins. It was a great ride.
Yeah. If he Lotto Sadal, obviously would have been better if Caleb didn't crash out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, it's hard to score them. You know, I mean, I honestly believe Caleb would have won 6 or 7 stages. I really do, and he would have won the green jersey, all of that. But they didn't. He wasn't there. So, and they got some other seriously hurt guys. So I gave them a 6. Harry Sweeney, fantastic. You know, personally, I thought I gave him a 7.5, but I gave him a 6.
Scooter?
I gave him 4. Ooh. Because for me, it's about, and I understand, obviously, I'm in the media, right? So I understand the whole broadcast thing and being on TV, et cetera. But they just, without Caleb, they just didn't win anything. And they were present at times, but they just didn't win anything. So they lost their main man, and it put him down to a 4, unfortunately, for me.
Is that a bit of a danger when you do go in all chips in with your premier sprinter, Scooter? Like a lot of teams try and spread it.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, if you've got a pure sprinter, typically you've only got one, haven't you? So mm-hmm. No one's got the luxury of this lead-out man. Like if you took out Cav, Michael Morkov isn't the main man that's going for sprints. You know, you took out Cav when Mark Renshaw was the sprinter. Mark tried to be a sprinter on his own and wasn't able to win races. So you kind of, if you're at that level, you've got your main man and that's kind of it. But, you know, that's what it is. You know, I think Caleb was, you know, on such good form and predicted to win so many stages that you are going to go in all guns blazing for one guy. It's just unfortunate that he crashed. You know, I don't think they did the wrong thing. But
can't you just throw in like one token mountain goat and just go, mate, you're on your own up the climbs, but just give us something. They used to Robbie was running the show.
They did that with Cadell when he first came in. Yeah, Cadell comes in, runs 8th in the tour, and Robbie's still chasing green jerseys. But as soon as Cadell started to go better, it was like, Robbie, could you just step aside at this next tour for us, please?
Yeah.
And that creates friction, doesn't it?
Yeah. Anyway.
Funny about that.
Team DSM, iffy. They had high expectations going into the tour this year.
I don't know what's happened there. That's gone from this wonderful team with that, like a big family, all cuddling each other. And what they did last year was amazing. I think we gave them a 9 or 9.5 last year. What's happened? There's bluing. There's no love there at all. So I gave them a 4, and I could have given them a 3, actually.
Anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. On the same, I give him a 4 as well, and you're probably right, John. 3 is probably more appropriate, but yeah.
Okay. Team Arkea Samsic. Scooter?
Okay, so they didn't do a lot other than Quintana was trying and actually wore the polka dot jersey. So at least he was in a jersey, which meant he was leading one of the main competitions. So I gave him a 6. Feel more about they're probably more of a 5, but because of Quintana actually wearing a jersey for a day or two, whatever it was, so 6.
Okay.
What do you reckon, Johnny?
Yeah, it was similar. I was actually impressed with him. He kept up a bash. A couple, I can't remember the name of the guys, but they were in breaks quite regularly. So I gave him a 6.5.
Okay. Citroën.
I gave them an 8. The rest of the team really didn't do that much, but, 4th on GC, and as I said, it's the main race is the main race, and 4th was a great result for them.
Well, when you give these scores, do you play into account what your expectations were as well going into the race?
No.
This is all purely on what they did.
It's a race, right? So if you start a Formula One race, you've got teams that are expected to win and teams expected to lose, but they all want to win. Everyone goes to a race to try and win and want to win. Their own personal expectations, they can rate themselves on that, but we can only rate them on how they perform in the race on the start line, the same as everybody else. That's my belief. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, like Robin McEwen, for example, he gave him a 9.5, but I think that was because he didn't expect them to perform the way they did this year's tour.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, no. That's not on the Scooter scale.
No, because and look, to back that up, and look, no one's going to no one's going to challenge Robbie. He's incredible experience and wealth of knowledge within the sport. But for mine is if you give them a 9.5 and say Ineos, which we'll get to soon, if you gave them less because they expected to win, well, they've still finished better than than AG2R have. So how could you give AG2R more than a team that did better than them? So that's my theory on it.
Okay. Yeah, third, fourth, but they won a stage and Ineos didn't win a stage. But I gave them an 8.5 because it's all about one man, really. They didn't – I don't think they supported Ben well enough early, especially. I wondered why, Van Avermaet was going up the road. And later on they did their best, but they didn't have anyone really capable of helping him much. But they're saying that they believe in Ben and they're going to build a team around him for the future. Well, they're going to have to go and spend some bucks because they need a couple of really good climbers to come in that core, into that team for Ben to be able to take the next step.
Hey, the Wheel Wizard, he's saying, you Aussies have direct line to DSM with Luke Roberts. What's going on with riders wanting to leave or Jai Hindley to Bora?
True. True. We have.
We can't answer it, Wheel Wizard. We've got direct lines, but we don't know anything.
Well, that is true.
Get Luke on and ask him the hard questions. What happened to the family? Hey, yeah. What's happened?
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be chewing at the bit. EF Education, Nippo. Now, at one point there, obviously, Iran was second on GC, and I think he's finished 10th in the end. How do you score them, Scooter?
Well, because he did squeeze into the top 10. So I gave them, they were all in for that one ride and unfortunately slipped down. So anyone that fits in the top 10 still, it's a great result. So a 7 for them, scraped into a 7. 6 might have fitted the team better, but, they were all in for GC and unfortunately a couple of bad days for Rigoberto.
If we had some viewer comments about potentially Esteban Chavez joining EF next year. Have you heard any of those murmurs?
I've heard murmurs that he might be leaving, but not officially, not from the team, just same as your friend heard them. I didn't hear where he was going, but I just heard that his time could be up, but that's just a rumour.
Yeah, well, no, that was reported in Holland. Broadcast.
I saw it on a website somewhere. My EF Education, I gave them a 7.5 because Iran was, looking good until 4 days to go. But they had they were often in the breaks. Had Sergio Higuita of Bissiga did a really good ride in the time trials as well. So I gave him a 7.5.
Chris Blockley wants to know: can we get some more points for Lachlan's super ride and raising all that money as well? You factor that into it as the what the team achieved in July.
The whole team with Lockie.
That was the best performance of the whole team, no doubt.
Sure.
It was. Interestingly, with Lockie, and because Lockie's, as I've said this before, great guy, awesome, and what he raised, what he did, the impetus behind that was just fantastic, and that he has to be praised for it. But as I said when we mentioned this last time, I also believe this could possibly signal the end of his pro career. Because if he's actually doing that, focusing on it and being allowed by the team to go and do what is a great thing, but it doesn't really fit into what high-performance cycling is. So I'm waiting to see what the outcome is for Lockie as a pro going forward. And look, he's got a better chance of achieving what he did because he's a pro, isn't he? So, if it was just a punter off the street, he wouldn't get the recognition, so you're not going to raise the same set of money. But Lockie's, physically going to get through a ride like that better than anyone else.
Today says, another 3 points for EF for that effort alone. Tim McLean for Ineos, do you think they re-signed Geraint Thomas? PS, great show, fellas. Really enjoyed it. Keep it up. Well, we'll get to Ineos in a sec, so you can maybe cover that then. Alpecin Phoenix, fellas, what do you score them? Obviously, Vanderpoel had the jersey for quite a number of stages there. That score well.
They should, shouldn't they? But, 8 from me. So I'm reserving the top spots for the guys that won up on GC. So they did an incredible job, and it's an 8.
Yeah, Iffy?
Well, if it's the end of the first week, I gave him a 10. And I was really impressed with Philipson right the way through it. I mean, on the podium again, I meant to Google at him. It was 7 times on the podium, the stages, I think. That's absolutely amazing. So I gave him an 8.5.
8.5. Okay, Kefidis. Now, traditionally, don't really do a lot at the Tour de France, but get a start every year because ASO well connected with the sponsorship of the team, and they've got a start for life.
World Tour now, mate. They're World Tour. They have to get a start. They're not like the old days. They were getting a start. As wasn't you the say, older, but yeah. World, yeah, yeah, but they no, they're World Tour now.
Well, there you go. How long they've been?
And it's an easy.
You've been on Kangaroo Island as well, have you?
And it is an easy team to pick on because of their history of doing their best to lose. Yeah. But because they did have a rider in Martin in the top 10, I gave them a 7. So in terms of team performance, it's kind of like AG2R. If you take Ben out of it, they were crap. But they ran in the top 10, and the race is about trying to, you know, win the race overall. So 7.
Iffy?
And they were having a go in breakaways, and they had a go, you know.
TV time. That gets good points, Iffy. TV time.
Well, if it's real TV time, you know, like you're actually doing something, Laporte was up the road quite a bit, so I gave him a 7 as well.
Okay. Groupama FDJ Scooter.
6, which is probably higher than they needed to get, but they did run 11th. They were let down – well, not let down, but Goudou, who was riding really, really well and had that he was with stomach bug or whatever it was that put him out of the GC, but he was able to climb himself back to 11th, so almost made the top 10, but he got sick. So, you know, I think he would have been up there 6th, 7th, something like that otherwise, and unfortunately lost Arnaud Démare early on. But you can't, you know, give scores on what they could have won. He was out, so it doesn't matter, but 11th overall, so, yeah, gave him 6.
If he...
Yeah, I felt for them because it wasn't actually quite a few of them got crook with a stomach bug. It's what put Scottson out. And I gave him a 6.5. I thought Goudou actually got his act together. He'd been sick and come back, and I was impressed with his last mountain ride. Sorry about that.
So you're getting sick as well, John.
It's a shame. It's a shame. Miles, I joke about it, but Miles and the guys, if they could have got an extra couple of days in with that stomach bug, they would have really stripped a few extra kilograms off, and he would have been climbing so much better in the races after the tour. But yeah, there are other side effects to doing that, so you probably shouldn't.
Scooter Bora Hansgrove, Eddie wrote them. Wilco Kelderman obviously finishing 5th on GC.
And a couple of stage wins. So, yeah, I gave them an 8. So right up there on the GC and a couple of stage wins. Nils Pollitt was a good one. So, yeah, 8 from me.
Iffy?
For all the same reasons, 8 from me.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. And without Sagan. So we're rating them, on Sagan's performances. So it just shows you how much that team has grown. Yeah.
Depth. Movie star, Scooter.
Well, I wanted to mark them down, but because Mass was 6th on GC, you know, and I can't give them less than, say, an Astana, so I've put them at 7 because they're up there with a 6th place overall. But they did stuff all else throughout the race.
Yep. Iffy?
Yeah, I had trouble getting them. I was going down a ways. I end up giving them a 6, mainly because, you know, They win the teams race every year. I think they finished about 8th or 9th in the teams race. Other than Mass getting in the top 10, they did absolutely bugger all.
Superman has changed his nickname to Superboy.
Well, they're another team that feel like they're sort of a bit of this going on. If you watch that Netflix series as well, I don't know if that was hammed up for the cameras, but definitely not as peachy as they used to be. All right, moving along to a team that's obviously performed well, De Koenig Quickstep Scooter.
De Koenig, yep. So in terms of overall classification, you know, it's not what they were about, but with so many stage wins with Cav, I gave them a 9.
Iffy?
I gave them a 9 as well because for a whole stack of reasons, you know, with Alaphilippe, I just... just love to watch him race. With his winning stage, he's wore the yellow. He's up the road day after day. I think he was just as much towards the 9 almost as Cav. So I gave him a 9 as well.
Scooter Trek Segafredo.
6. 6 from me. Yep. Yep. Didn't really play much of a role. Didn't really fire a shot.
The shark, no good. Iffy. Trek Segafredo?
5.5.
All right. Israel Startup Nation Scooter?
5. Some great names in there, but they really didn't do too much. Dan Martin sort of almost kind of impressed in the Pyrenees, but didn't really come
Michael away Woods had a crack. He was
But as I say, it comes down, like, what is the race? You know, is it how many laps you get into an F1 race, or is it where you finish at the finish line? And unfortunately, you know, he didn't even finish the race. I understand why he didn't finish. He pulled out to freshen up for the Olympics, but fell away from the KOM, didn't win a stage, and was out of GC.
Yep. If he, what did you give him?
I gave him a 6. I thought I was impressed with Woods. How's it go? If you could just learn how to go down a hill, you might actually win something else.
All right, we've got 3 teams to go, fellas. A couple of big ones here. Ineos Grenadiers Scooter.
Ineos, obviously not what they are used to, although they should be now after last year as well, but 8 points for them because they're on the podium. So they didn't do anything else really, but they were going for one man. And he came away on the podium. The thing about last year with Trek, you know, that was a huge thing for us to have Richie on the podium, and these guys are finished on the podium as well, so 8 points.
Hey, sorry to backtrack, but Will Wizards called you out. He said Trek won a stage and Israel Startup Nation didn't.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yep. But then you even it out with, you know, Woods going for the polka dots and all these sorts of things. So, yeah, they got a stage, and that's why they got the extra point from me.
I'm just giving them an extra point because I forgot about that. Mollema was a great stage win. So you're right, 6.5. They've just jumped up one.
There you go. That's it, mate. Keep them accountable. Now, if you want to give Ineos.
I only gave them a 7 because I just thought they – not only – look, okay, they had bad luck. The guys got hurt. Very impressed with Geraint Thomas, you know, fighting on with his injuries, and he's a tough nut. But I can't believe how their tactics, how bad they were. They just never got it worked it out. So, even though on the podium, 7.
And revisiting the question from Tim McLean, do you think that they'll re-sign Geraint Thomas?
Oh, I can't imagine them not really.
He's ingrained there. So, okay, Froome left. But it also comes down to what Geraint wants to do. Like, he might be happy to now be a support rider. Maybe he thinks that 2018, that was the peak of his career. He's not going to win the Tour again. You know, maybe he focuses on the Vuelta, on the Giro. You know, that's a conversation that we're not privy to. And look, he's a great guy. You know, does he think he's going to go to another team and win the Tour again? I just don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, he might be happy to do like a Richie role. Although Richie's role this year compared to what he did last year was nothing, was it?
Iffy, Team Jumbo-Visma, talk about depth. I mean, they lost Roglic early, but and Kreiswick and Tony Martin.
They lost half the team, mate. I tell you, I've given them a 10 because, you know what, they didn't win the bike race. They've ran second in the bike race and a bloody good ride in the
– Who ran Vinegar. Second?
Vinegar. And then Wout van Aert to do what he did, you know, win three stages in every discipline of the thing. I mean, wow, yeah. Normally I'd say 9.5, but nah, you know what, 10.
10. Can't do any better than that, Scotty. You give him a 10 as well?
No. I gave him a 9 because they didn't win. They didn't win the race, so they can only be one. It's like the Highlander, okay? Yeah. And they didn't win, so they next best, which is 9. So it's only I only gave 2 teams 9, and that was them and De Koenig because of the number of stages they won, you know, throughout the race, and were quite prominent. So,
so if UAE, do you give them an 11?
I give them 10 with a bullet.
10 from me, that's for sure.
Yeah, 10. Yeah. Yeah. 10's all round. Perfect 10.
You know what? I was very impressed. Like everyone, I was a bit sus that they were going to be strong enough. I knew that they were a little bit stronger than last year. But they didn't have to do it last year. This year, especially with the way he rode, taking the yellow jersey so early, I was, whoa, that's not what they need with this team. But they just got better and better. A couple of days earlier, they looked a little bit under pressure. They just blossomed as the event went on, and they were just sensational.
Yep, for sure. All right. Well, good job on the team reviews, fellas. That was very entertaining. Anything you want to add before we wrap things up?
Can I say Danny Martinez tested positive for COVID and looks like he's going to be replaced by Rigoberto Urán for the Olympic Games. So how unfortunate. We're going to see more of this, I'm sure, and from athletes that get to Tokyo. How heartbreaking to go there and then test positive. We'll wait and see. You know, that's is going to happen. But Martinez didn't get on the plane, so, you know, it's okay. And Caleb's back on the bike. So good to see.
I saw that.
And training again.
Titanium insert he's got, which is
we have the technology. Robocop. We can rebuild him. It's the $6 million man. Fulsang, to see how Fulsang is saying that he thinks it was the COVID vaccine that held him back. He said he felt fine, but just couldn't push himself to the limit.
I think he was listening to the back hubs of some of those bikes as well. But anyway,
I saw another breaking news that the Japanese athletes' village, they had those sexless beds that were apparently made out of cardboard. And if there was any sudden impact, they just collapse or whatever. And this athlete's got in there and he's jumping on it. It's like not breaking. And he said, it's all bullshit. So, mate, now that those beds are not sexless, it's going to spread like a bushfire if they're not being careful. The COVID bubbles could be
I saw a comment from someone, I forget who that was now, that actually said, have they not thought about a chair? Like just sliding a chair underneath so that if it does, then it supports it. Okay, fair enough. Look, it's the Olympic Games.
We're starting to talk crap again.
No, but
that's what we always do at the end of the show. But, John, when you start talking about sexless beds, I mean, if that doesn't get the numbers up, nothing will. Or we can go back to talking about teams again if you want.
I've got one of them at home as well. But anyway, we're not going there.
Well, we have.
All right. Well, I think that's our cue to check out, boys, before we get ourselves in some
serious. I have something to say. I want to thank you, Scooter. For the jumping in for at least two of the 3 weeks. As always, you've added stacks of depth to our show.
Thank you, John. Sure. And Dan, I'm sure Dan's appreciative as well because it took some of the heat off him. So you weren't just berating him. You got to berate me a few times as well. So you could sit back and just chill for a bit. Yeah.
No, we want to obviously wish all the best too because you've got a big block of commentary coming up with the Olympics, mate. We're super excited and being able to watch it back here and get all the commentary in Australia at a reasonable hour, it's going to be fantastic. So we're super G'd, mate.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Anamir's Fulligat and Paul van der Ploeg on the mountain bike. So we're going to have some fun with it all. Yeah,
That's awesome. All right. Well, we'll be back. Are we going to be back tomorrow night, John, or Thursday?
I'm waiting on a call back from Stewie O'Grady. He's just apologising for his mistakes. Stewie, you were sensational. Waiting to hear back from John O'Connor, Ben's dad, but as soon as we get him, we'll be on. We're definitely on Thursday with all the update on the Amy Gillett Foundation and what they're doing.
Yep.
And Scotty?
Well, I'm just saying, is this the part where we do the admin live on air that could be done after the show? But off air? No, this is that part.
We openly discuss it so that
we're going to let our viewers know if we're going to be on tomorrow night or not.
Keep going. Keep on listening. I'm listening. Keep going.
Yeah. No. Okay. Well, we could be on tomorrow, but what you got to do is the easiest way is to like, share, subscribe, and turn on notifications on YouTube.com/ The Detour Podcast, because what will happen is when we do go live, you'll get a little notification on your phone. It'll go ping, they're on and talking absolute rubbish. So, don't miss that. As we said, thanks again, Scotty. Good luck for the Olympics, mate. It's going to be a ripping couple of weeks. And, if that intro is anything to go on from what you say, the coverage is going to be fantastic. So looking forward to it. Thanks again to everyone tuning in as well. Congratulations to the prize winners. We're going to announce what's happening with the Kureka Foundation prizes as well. So stay tuned. Speak to you very shortly. Thanks again. Cheers. This is the winning